Welcome back to Lake Effect. I'm Bonnie North. Thanks for joining us. The Grohmann Museum on the campus of the Milwaukee School of Engineering opened its doors in 2007. The museum is dedicated to art that depicts human industry, quite literally men and women at work. The museum houses around 1,000 European and American paintings, sculptures, and works on paper that show various forms of work, and it's one of the most comprehensive collections of its kind. But almost immediately upon its opening, the museum came under fire for including works of the 20th century German landscape painter and industrial artist Erich Mercker without duly noting Mercker's involvement with the Nazi Party. That controversy set Dr. Patrick Jung on a scholastic quest to find out more about Mercker and other industrial artists working in Germany at the time. The result is a new book, Erich Mercker and Technical Subjects, the first scholarly examination of Mercker's life and art. The book has just been published, and an exhibit of Mercker's work is about to open at the museum. Jung, along with the executive director of the Grohmann Museum, James Kieselberg, joined me in the studio. Gentlemen, welcome to Lake Effect. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start at the beginning. Who was Erich Mercker?
Erich Mercker was a German artist. He was born in the 1890s. He was born to two very wealthy Pomeranian families. Both of them had large amounts of land. His father's side of the family had provided military officers, first for the armies of Brandenburg-Prussia and then after unification in 1871 to a united Germany. So he came from these very wealthy, very conservative landowning families in Pomerania. His parents encouraged him with all sorts of artistic enterprises when he was younger. And when he was in his late teens, early 20s, he decided to become a painter. And he was a painter until the day he died in 1973.
Well, why is he important artistically? What does he bring to us now in the 21st century?
Well, I think that he is a significant artist in a number of ways, both industrially and otherwise. Obviously, at a certain point of his career, he worked specifically in industrial themes, but even as a landscape artist, he's very prolific and just a wonderful master at what he did.
How do you describe the style of art? I know he was influenced by Impressionism, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at his body of work, is it realistic? Did he ever go into abstraction?
No, he never went into abstract art. Now, when you talk about abstract art, there's a whole spectrum there. And really, French Impressionists from the 1870s onward, that was sort of the first baby steps toward, you know, abstract art. It was the first real avant-garde movement. By the time Mercker begins painting, especially in the years after World War I, Impressionism was a pretty tried and true, pretty well accepted style. There were more radical, more avant-garde styles, but he pretty much decided as a young man in his early 20s he wanted to follow the Impressionist style. He was influenced by another German painter named Fritz Baer, who was influenced by not only the French Impressionists but by the French Barbizon painters. And once he locked in on that style, he never really gave it up. He was never influenced by any other artistic movements after that.
Where was he primarily painting once he became an adult?
After the end of World War I, in which he served, he moved back to Munich, got married, and he stayed in Munich for the rest of his life, except for a few years after World War II. His apartment had been bombed during the war, and he lived in a couple rural villages in Bavaria. But for the most part, he lived his entire adult life in Munich.
Now, why is he important to the Milwaukee School of Engineering? Why the book and why this exhibition?
Well, he's the most widely represented artist in our collection, or over 80, numbering 82 paintings in the collection. So he's well represented. And over the course of the bulk of the works that we have in the collection are over the course of 20, 25 years, from 1920 to the late 1940s. And those pieces are particularly important in documenting the industry at the time. And that's what the Grohmann Museum does. Of course, we collect the art of industry, the art of labor, the art of human achievement. And these are particularly important for documenting the public work projects at the time, as well as the industry in general at that time.
And when did he decide to move from landscape to industry?
Well, there was never really a point where he decided to move to industry. He always was doing traditional landscapes. He was always doing technical works. There was never a time where he, you know, stopped one and did the other. He was always painting both. But one thing I want to add is one of the things I found out during the course of my research, there had been nothing, virtually nothing written on Mercker before this. I mean, that's the biggest reason I took the project on. I had never come across a historical topic where there was just nothing. And in the course of that, I found out not only was he was probably, you know, the greatest of the German industrial artists, but I've discovered now that German industrial artists are severely under-researched. I mean, it's just a huge, wide-open field. And that's – again, I've just never had that. It's really exciting knowing that you're the first person to really dive into this topic.
So there was nothing even in German?
Oh, there was a little bit in German, but even that was pretty slim. I mean, there was just – never had been a comprehensive history of his life, of his work, where he fit into German art history, where he fit into German industrial history. And all of the artists who he worked with, there were about five major artists who did industrial art, and they're all under-researched and just virtually unknown. Well, and there's a lot of reasons for that.
That's partially the product of the climate in post-World War II Germany, though. There was a rejection of everything representational and anything that had come before for obvious reasons, because the last 20 years of German history, they almost wanted to turn a blind eye to all of that. And so that's why I think when it was ripe for the picking, that is the research on these artists when they were still living, it was largely ignored at the time as a result of that, though.
James, you mentioned the history of Germany that we can't really ignore. I mean, Mercker was a Nazi, and he was part of the party by inclination. You talk about this, Patrick, in the book, you know, that he was very conservative and he was very much a part of that movement. How do we adjust to that now? How do we look at his art in a way that is both fair to the art and also fair to what now? I mean, most people will find that difficult.
Oh, absolutely. I think to be fair to the theme, though, what we want to think about as it relates to Mercker's body of work is that there's nothing overtly propagandistic about it. I know those that haven't seen his work mentioning the Nazi connection might think that. They might think they're going to see swastikas and armbands and
or Leni Riefenstahl kind
right,
of
right,
thing.
And goose stepping down the plaza. That's not what we're dealing with at all. Instead, what we're dealing with is a documentarian who focused on those public works projects at the time. And I think that him subscribing to that at the time is not particularly problematic in that I think a larger German culture at that time and the German populace all subscribed to these notions too, because what they saw was an improvement. They saw the destruction of World War I. And anything to prop the culture up and to move forward before everybody recognized the atrocities, of course, I think wasn't so stigmatized at the time, obviously. I think it's something looking back, and now we see the full history and how everything played out, it is more problematic presently. But I think in looking at an historical context, as I said, there's nothing overtly propagandistic about what he did, but it was more just an advancement of German culture at the time, prior to a full picture of what the party was doing.
Was there any indication in any of the original documents that you found that he was sorry that he had been part of that?
Oh, yeah,
in later life?
No doubt.
Yeah.
There were two people I really relied on heavily. First of all, his daughter, who's still alive. She's 91. My co-author and I were very clear that we really needed honest answers, and we met with her more than 20 times. And she understood that trying to twist the truth would certainly not benefit anybody. But we also – there was an art dealer who he had worked with, a gentleman named Siegfried Kunke, who knew him pretty well too. And he's an older gentleman now as well. Both of them said that after the war, he just completely lost interest in politics. He wore his apolitical nature on his sleeve. He didn't even vote in the West German elections. I think he was just so afraid that the West German government could become the same thing the Nazi government had become.
And I think that apathy was not unlike the attitude of any everyday German at the time too, because I think that they largely had felt they'd been taken, obviously.
Yeah, well, and you could also say that they were trying to distance themselves from something that people were looking at now and saying, you know, that was awful. And, you know, why were you part of
and
that?
And as I mentioned before, rejection of the historical, even the immediate historical.
Right.
They just wanted
that
was completely in the rear view.
Add a couple things. First of all, and this is important to understand, during the Nazi period, licensed artists like Mercker had still a lot of freedom, and I use that word intentionally. They had the freedom and the autonomy to paint what they wanted to paint, and if the Nazis liked it, they patronized it. They bought it. They paid money for it. So he was simply doing what the Nazis liked, and he didn't have to change anything. I think that's true of all the industrial artists. Their industrial landscapes reflected the strength, the economic might of Germany. And they just kind of came along at the right time and had the right patron, And unfortunately, that happened to be the Nazi state.
Are you concerned at all that the book will be seen as an apology for
that?
Well,
yeah, maybe. But I mean, at the same time, I tried to be as objective as I could be. I don't think it's an apology. It's an historical explanation for what happened to this man. I think Nazi Germany is sort of a it's sort of one of those tales that, you know, this could happen to any society. It's sort of a cautionary tale in my mind.
So, James, as the exhibition that this book supports gets ready to open, how did you approach putting the works up this time? I mean, the last time we saw these in an exhibition was 2007.
Right.
And that's when everything kind of like blew up and we learned more about Merkur.
But many of these works have been on display in the permanent gallery since then. So over the course of the last 7 years. And I think that the key word that we're looking for is context. We want to provide the visitor with the tools to understand what they're looking at, the historical implications, and how that all came together.
Mm-hmm. So which 25 did you choose out of the 90 or so that you have?
Well, I defer to Patrick. He made the selections.
Oh,
curator of the exhibition.
Yeah. First of all, his most famous industrial landscape in my mind is Abendam Hochofen, Evening at the Blast Furnace. And he painted that many times. And if you're going to pick a masterpiece out, if you're going to pick out the one piece by Erich Merkur that really, you know, sort of – define him as a master, it's Evening at the Blast Furnace. So we have four of those. But we really tried to show the paintings he produced for the Nazi state. We show the Autobahn. We have some outstanding panels. And the two things that we basically say about Erich Merkur, I mean, he has to be held responsible for what he did. Just by selling paintings to the Nazi state, he lent an air of legitimacy to that state, despite the fact that he knew that thousands of artists were denied an ability to make a living because they were avant-garde. And so we tried to, we've tried to basically put enough context in there. One thing to keep in mind about the articles in 2007, nobody had done research on Merkur. There was nothing out there. Now we have the ability to know exactly what he did, how he did it. The context simply wasn't there in 2007.
So this is not only a way of showing his work in context, but as a way of correcting that record.
Yeah, to some degree. And in some ways, his ties to the Nazis were stronger than we thought. In some ways, they weren't as strong. Some of the paintings that he produced, all of them were, definitely lent an air of legitimacy to the Nazi state and its ideology. That's one of the things we try to say in the exhibition. That was, if we're going to fault Erich Merkur for anything, that's probably the gravest error that he made.
Can we ever separate the art from the artist and his time? And should we?
No, certainly not.
I think
that's one of those
not.
Things that we think about when we look at art. I mean, aside from the basics, what are we looking at? How is it produced? One of the other important questions is just that, though. What was happening art historically and in broader history at the time this was produced? And what was it a response to?
And Erich Merkur definitely understood that after the war. He understood that his art had implications. But, by that time, the damage had been done. And we can't ever separate that. We can't ever forget that.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming in and talking about this a little bit. Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. It's been great.
Dr. Patrick Jung is an associate professor of general studies at the Milwaukee School of Engineering, and he's the author of Erich Merkur and Technical Subjects, A Landscape and Industrial Artist in 20th Century Germany. James Kieselberg is the executive director of the Grohmann Museum at the school. The exhibition, Erich Merkur, Painter of Industry, opens tomorrow and runs through mid-December. We'll take one last break, and then the Madison-born writer Maria Mills joins us to share her remarkable memoir of getting to know the writer Harper Lee. Stay tuned. Lake Effect returns right after this.